Now, here's the thing.
Another touche.
You know, and it says they were of royal birth. So, you know, what would happen when you were a king is you would intermarry with another kingdom, because then you had, you know, then that's like a treaty. So that he had all of these treaties and all of these foreign wives with all of these countries and places that, you know, he had treaties with. Now, so I will bring you over here to this awesome map that I have. This is vintage. I just want you to know this. This, and I don't know if you guys can see this over there, but the orange striped part, that is the land that David and Solomon's kingdom had. Okay? So it was a huge amount compared to what it ended up being, which we'll get to that, but huge, okay? So a lot of these wives weren't necessarily what we would consider a wife. I mean, honestly, how could one man have 1,000 women? That's just
stupid.
Well, it is stupid, but think about it, too. It's just, you know, how would you even know their name? You know, you didn't. But regardless, 700 wives. In addition, it tells us very early on in Solomon's story that the very first woman that became his wife, he had made a treaty with Egypt, and he married Pharaoh's daughter. Okay? And, you know, I don't have these verses here, but how many times did we read, don't intermarry, don't intermarry, don't intermarry, because, why? Turn your heart astray. And it did. Okay, so getting back to what God said in Deuteronomy, he must not accumulate large amounts of silver and gold. Okay, in 1 Kings 10:14, and this is only one place where it talks about gold that I'm going to read to you about. The weight of the gold that Solomon received yearly was 666 talents, not including the revenues from merchants and traders. Now, you're thinking, well, how much is a talent? Okay, 666 talents is about 23 metric tons of gold. And I did just some calculations today. Today, the price of gold is $1,201 per ounce. There are, I'm going to give you the round numbers. There are 35,000 ounces in a metric ton. So that is 811,000 ounces of gold at $1,200 an ounce is $974,372,597.08.
Round figures?
Round figures. Annually. That's how much he took in annually. That doesn't even include other things, like in chapter 9, verse 28, where Hiram, somebody, his guys sailed off and brought back 420 talents of gold. And it, you know, it talks about 120 talents of gold here. The guy had gold, okay? He must not accumulate large amounts of silver and gold. Guilty. Okay? God also said, when you have a king and he takes the throne, here's what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to write for himself a copy of the law. Now, I don't think that meant have your guys do it. I think that meant write for yourself a copy of the law. Because you know what happens when you write something down? You remember it. You get it. You're more familiar with it. Well, it's to be with him, and he's to read it all the days of his life so that he may learn to revere the Lord his God, follow his decrees, and all that. This is what it says going on further in chapter 11 of 1 Kings, verse 5. It already told us that his wives led him astray. He followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely as David his father had done. On a hill east of Jerusalem, Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable god of Moab, and for Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. He did the same for all his foreign wives who burned incense and offered sacrifices to their god. How sad is that? I mean, this is such a sad story. It breaks my heart. You know, Solomon, who God made king, blessed him with wisdom, blessed him with everything you could desire. And he does this. Now, you know, Molech, the god of the Ammonites, Molech, and this tells us, we learn about this back in Judges, I think. Molech, they sacrificed their infant babies to Molech. They would throw their babies into the fire. That's the kind of worship of Molech. And that's what Solomon had set up. I mean, awful, awful, awful.
He's in Ghostbusters, too.
So,
right.
this is what it goes on in 1 Kings 11. This is what happens. The Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. Though he had forbidden Solomon to follow other gods, Solomon did not keep the Lord's command. So the Lord said to Solomon, "Since this is your attitude and you have not kept my covenant and my decrees which I commanded you, I will most certainly tear the kingdom away from you and give it to one of your subordinates. Nevertheless, for the sake of your father, David, I will not do it during your lifetime. I will tear it out of the hand of your son. Yet I will not tear the whole kingdom from him, but will give him one tribe for the sake of David, my servant, and for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen." So you notice God's mercy here, God's graciousness, has nothing to do with Solomon. It has everything to do with David. Everything to do with David. You know, aside from these horrible things, there were also some other common sense things that Solomon did. He put a heavy weight of taxation on the people. You know, in 1 Kings 4, we read where there were 12 districts, and each district had a manager, and each district was in charge for 1 month of supplying the king's household and the king's table with provisions. Okay, that's taxation. And you think, oh, well, the king's household, that's not that big. He had 1,000 wives, let alone helpers and other people. It was a lot of people. It was a lot to provide every month. So there was taxation. We read a lot about conscripted and forced labor, okay? Forced labor. He made slaves of, you know, non-Israelites, non-Hebrews, okay? And I look at that and I think, shame on you. You used to be slaves, and now you're doing the same thing. So there were just, you know, there were some things specifically that God said, but then there were other things that just, to me, seemed common sense. So, is it your turn yet? No. Still my turn. So here's what happens. There's a guy named Jeroboam who works for Solomon. And, you know, he did such a good job that Solomon put him in charge of a few things. Well, Jeroboam, son of Nebat. Jeroboam was on his way someplace, and a prophet came to him and met him on the road, and Jeroboam had a new cloak on. And the prophet took it, and he tore it into 12 pieces, and he gave Jeroboam 10 pieces as a word picture of what God was going to do. God was going to take 10 of the tribes away from Solomon and give them to Jeroboam, and he was going to be king. So this kind of strange prophecy with the torn cloak and all that happens. Well, somehow Solomon learns about it, and Solomon decides to try to kill Jeroboam. Jeroboam flees to Egypt. Well, in the meantime, Solomon dies. And his son, Rehoboam, these names rhyme, okay, confusing, I know, Rehoboam and Jeroboam, Rehoboam becomes king. And so this is now chapter 12 of 1 Kings. Solomon dies, Rehoboam becomes king. Well, Israel, all Israel, sends for Jeroboam. Solomon's dead, come on back. They send for Jeroboam, and they want him to go before the king on their behalf. So this is what it says. That Jeroboam and the whole assembly of Israel go to Rehoboam, and they say this: "Your father put a heavy yoke on us, but now lighten the harsh labor and the heavy, lighten the harsh labor and the heavy yoke he put on us, and we will serve you." Rehoboam answered, "Go away for 3 days and then come back to me." So the people went away. So basically they come to him and say, "Life's been hard. Please, lighten the load on us." He sends him away. So scripture tells us here that Rehoboam sent for the elders who had served his father, the wise, experienced, older men. And he says, "How would you advise me?" And they reply, verse 7, "If today you will be a servant to these people and serve them and give them a favorable answer, they will always be your servants." Great answer, right? Good advice. Well, Rehoboam rejected this advice and instead consulted the young men who he'd grown up with, who were now his advisors. And he says, "What's your advice?" And this is what it says in verse 10. The young men who had grown up with him replied, "These people have said to you, 'Your father put a heavy yoke on us and make our yoke lighter.' Now tell them, 'My little finger is thicker than my father's waist. My father laid on you a heavy yoke. I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I will scourge you with scorpions.'" Ooh. Well, when Jeroboam and the people returned after 3 days, that's what he told them. "I'm going to make it harder on you. You think my father was tough? I'm way tougher." Verse 16, this is what they said in response. When all Israel saw that the king refused to listen to them, they answered the king, "What share do we have in David? What part in Jesse's son? To your tents, Israel. Look after your own house, David." So the Israelites went home. But as for the Israelites who were living in the towns of Judah, Rehoboam still ruled over them. So let me translate that. Jesse's son was David. Tribe of Judah, David. Okay? Basically, all of Israel said, "Tribe of Judah, you can have him. We're out of here." So the other 10 tribes, "We're done." No, you're going, okay, wait. Judah and 10, that's only 11, right? Was anyone thinking that? Tribe of Benjamin was very, very small. The tribe of Judah basically absorbed the tribe of Benjamin. So when we talk about Israel and Judah, Judah was really two tribes. Okay? Does that make sense? So now we have the 10 tribes, just like the prophet said to Jeroboam on the road. Those 10 tribes say, "We're going to, you know, go on our own." It's kind of like the Civil War with our country, the North and the South. Here's also something a little bit interesting that I think helped this along. Remember, Israel's first king was King Saul. When kings, and David had been anointed king, but he ran for his life. Saul tried to kill him. That went on for a lot of years. Saul finally dies. Well, the tribe of Judah at that time made David their king. And he was king over Judah for 7 years. And Saul's son was, you know, king over the rest, and there was lots of intrigue and murdering and things. And finally, after 7 years, all of Israel made David their king. So there's a precedent here of Judah kind of being on their own. You know, David's people kind of doing their own thing. So now we have this again. We have Judah, we have Israel. We have the northern kingdom now and the southern kingdom. And that's kind of what this map shows us right here, okay? Tribe of Judah and all the other 10 tribes. So Judah, southern kingdom. Israel, northern kingdom, all right? So, done. Split. Rehoboam tried to do business as usual after this happened. He tried to send out one of his guys who was in charge of the forced labor to try to keep things going. They stoned him to death. And Rehoboam escaped in his chariot back to Jerusalem. At that time, he decided, you know what? I'm going to go and attack. And he got the army, and he was going to go and attack. And a prophet came to him and said, don't do it. And he listened this time. So the kingdom splits. So now, meanwhile, in the northern kingdom, Israel, Jeroboam, son of Nebat, is now king. And here's what he did. This is what it says, and I think, what are we in? We are still in chapter 12. Yeah. Are we? Yes. Okay. Jeroboam says to himself, the kingdom will now likely revert to the house of David. David, if these people go up to offer sacrifices at the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem, they will again give their allegiance to their lord, Rehoboam, king of Judah. Then they will kill me and return to King Rehoboam. After seeking advice, the king made two golden calves. He said to the people, it is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Here are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt. One he set up in Bethel and the other in Dan. And this thing became a sin. The people came to worship one at Bethel and went as far as Dan to worship the other. So, understand this. Jerusalem was where the temple was. Jerusalem was where the worship was supposed to happen. Jerusalem was in Judah. Okay? Jerusalem was in Judah. So you have Jeroboam, even though the prophet had told him, God's going to give you the kingdom. And even though God told him, if you do this, I'll bless you. If you do this, if you do this, if you do this, it'll be good, you'll have the kingdom. If you don't, not going to be good. He gets insecure. He worries about all the people up here in Israel going down to Jerusalem to worship. So he gets advice. And they say, here's what we think you should do. Make golden calves. Set one up in Bethel and one in Dan. You'll notice at the upper and lower edges of the kingdom. How convenient. No need to go to Jerusalem. You can do all your worship right here. Right? So he sets up Dan and Bethel. He builds shrines. He appoints priests who were not Levites. Now, back in Exodus, God set up the priesthood. Priests are to be from the line of Aaron. Levites, from the line of Levi. High priests were from the line of Aaron. Not just anybody can be a priest. You have to be from the tribe of Levi. Nope. Jeroboam. Anyone who wants to be a priest, you let me know, I'll sign you up. It's like you can get ordained online now. Anybody can get ordained. You want to be ordained as anything? No problem. You can find a church online that will ordain you. Okay?
$80.
Yep. He started making up his own festivals and sacrificing to the golden calves. Do you see a theme here? I see a theme with both Rehoboam and Jeroboam. After seeking advice, right? Bad advice. Rehoboam ignored the advice of the elder, wiser, experienced guys and instead took the advice of the young, testosterone-poisoned hotheads. Jeroboam became insecure, took bad advice. Well, so in chapters 13 and 14, we have two episodes now where prophets come to Jeroboam and basically say, you know what? you did exactly what you weren't supposed to do, and the kingdom is going to be torn away from you. Two different times it happens. The second time, it's Ahijah, who was the priest that, or the prophet that came to him on the road and tore the cloak into 12 pieces. That same prophet comes to him in chapter 14 and says this in verse 7. Go tell Jeroboam that this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I raised you up from among the people and appointed you ruler over my people Israel. I tore the kingdom away from the house of David and gave it to you. But you have not been like my servant David, who kept my commands and followed me with all his heart, doing only what was right in the eyes, in my eyes. You have done more evil than all who lived before you. You have made for yourself other gods, made idols made of metal. You have aroused my anger and turned your back on me. Because of this, I am going to bring disaster on the house of Jeroboam. I will cut off from Jeroboam every last male in Israel, slave or free. I will burn up the house of Jeroboam as one burns dung until it's all gone. Dogs will eat those belonging to Jeroboam who die in the city, and birds will feed on those who die in the country. The Lord has spoken. Whoa. Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, was so evil that he became the standard. Just as King David was the standard for a godly king, we've seen he walked in the ways of his father David, okay? Jeroboam was the standard for evil kings. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord by following the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat. We see that repeated over and over and over and over throughout the rest of this story. So the kingdom has split in two. Northern kingdom, southern kingdom. And now Steve is going to talk to us about prophets.
So we have dark days in Israel. And we have dark days in Judah, where you can imagine a country that has split without even having a civil war. They all just got mad at each other and walked away. And so remember, the glory and the splendor of the temple and the riches that Julie had talked about that King Solomon was in command of and bringing in, and suddenly the country has fallen apart. And we have kings that are leading by example by setting up idols for the people to worship. And the people go along. And they follow this path. All of the things that they have been warned about and warned about and warned about for the hundreds of years that we've been talking about. They're doing exactly those things. And they are dark days. When we talked about the judges, we talked about God raising up people to look after Israel for certain periods of time. When we get to this period of history, God is still raising up people, but we call them prophets. They don't have any authority civilly or with the government, but God is raising up voices of God to speak to these people. And if you want to understand the prophets, it really, really helps to read them in context with the history of Kings and Chronicles. The prophets that are in our Bible are in this whole section at the back of the Old Testament, and they are not in chronological order. They are in order of the length of the book. So if you read through that thinking that you're going to get from A to B in there, you're not, okay? But to understand which prophet spoke to which period of time in this history that we're talking about, suddenly it makes a whole lot of sense. Julie, Vanna Julie, is showing you a poster right here that you can look at. You can access all kinds of stuff online that will show you. Some study Bibles have, you know, the order of the prophets and everything else. But God would raise up these men, these voices to speak. And they would speak both to Israel and to the surrounding countries, okay? So as you read those things, you kind of get an understanding of how these men talked in their own unique voices. In Israel, the northern kingdom, I just want to read a couple passages from a couple prophets of that area in that era. Amos chapter 2. In verse 6, Amos writes, "This is what the Lord says, for three sins of Israel, even four, I will not turn back my wrath. They sell the innocent for silver, and the needy for a pair of sandals. They trample on the heads of the poor as on the dust of the ground, and deny justice to the oppressed. Father and son use the same girl, and so profane my holy name. They lie down beside every altar on garments taken in pledge. In the house of their God they drink wine taken as fines. Yet I destroyed the Amorites before them. Though they were as tall as the cedars and strong as the oaks, I destroyed their fruit above and their roots below. I brought you out of Egypt and led you 40 years in the wilderness to give you the land of the Amorites. I also raised up prophets from among your children and Nazirites from among your youths. Is this not true, people of Israel, declares the Lord? But you made the Nazirites drink wine and commanded the prophets not to prophesy. Now then, I will crush you as a cart crushes when loaded with grain. The swift will not escape, the strong will not muster their strength, and the warrior will not save his life. The archer will not stand his ground. The fleet-footed soldier will not get away, and the horseman will not save his life. Even the bravest warriors will flee naked on that day, declares the Lord." Naked, fleeing. And then another prophet that I wanted to read to you was Hosea. Hosea's life was an illustration of what God was trying to communicate to these people. It says, I'll summarize. It says, "The word of the Lord came to Hosea, and God told him to go marry a girl." Now, when I was in college at Olivet Nazarene University, Christian campus, it was not unusual for a guy to say that God had told him to marry a certain girl. All right? Because there was a lot of pretty girls there. And the girls would usually say, "Yeah, when God tells me that, I'll get back to you." Okay? So this part of the story is not completely unusual in that God tells Hosea to go marry this girl. But this girl was famously loose. She was of loose moral character. And God said, "Go marry her and take her home. And your life is about to be an illustration of what my people have done." So Hosea goes and marries her, has a kid, she leaves him, goes living with another man. Hosea goes back, buys her back from this man, takes her home, has some more kids. I mean, it's just this crazy story, and you can imagine Hosea's heartbreak through this entire thing, but God put it on him to live this way, to show those people what it was like, how God's heart was being broken by the things that they were doing, by chasing after these other gods and the calves here and there and everywhere. This is in the last chapter of Hosea. "Return, O Israel, to the Lord your God. Your sins have been your downfall. Take words with you and return to the Lord. Say to him, 'Forgive all our sins. Receive us graciously that we may offer the fruit of our lips. Assyria cannot save us. We will not mount war horses. We will never again say, "Our gods," to what our own hands have made. For in you the fatherless find compassion. I will heal their waywardness. I will love them freely, for my anger is turned away from them. I will be like the dew to Israel. He will blossom like a lily, like a cedar of Lebanon. He will send down his roots. His young shoots will grow. His splendor will be like an olive tree, his fragrance like the cedar of Lebanon. People will dwell again in his shade. They will flourish like the grain. They will blossom like the vine. Israel's fame will be like the wine of Lebanon. Ephraim, what more have I to do with idols? I will answer him and care for him. I am like a flourishing juniper. Your fruitfulness comes from me. Who is wise? Let them realize these things. Who is discerning? Let them understand. The ways of the Lord are right. The righteous walk in him, but the rebellious stumble in them."